You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Rebecca Watson of Skepchick.org, and you are listening to Flopcast, the floppiest podcast on the internet.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 391.
Coming down the tracks at flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
And hello, Ed, because apparently Ed's still here. Hi.
Hi, Ed.
I missed my train.
So Ed was here last week for our bizarre train-themed Flopcast episode, and we had so much train talk that we knew right away going in that we were doing 2 weeks of train talk. So you're still here.
I am.
In Chicken Town. How about that? Are you enjoying all this train talk? Are you learning a lot?
I am. I know it may not look it, but I am.
By this glazed, indifferent look I have.
This is amazing.
You'd think that I didn't care about this at all, but somewhere deep inside, I'm somehow almost staying conscious through all this train talk.
I love a good train.
So we're going to get back to our what's in the bag, roller panel style train talk in just a minute, but Cornflake, before you lapse into a coma once again, what's going on for National Whatever Day?
I picked this one because, well, I figured our guest, Ed, would appreciate it.
Okay.
So it's...
Is it train day?
It's not train day.
There is a national train day.
There is. It's true.
May 15th?
That would have been great.
May 10th. May 10th.
Ah, all yes. Right. Now,
mark your calendars, everybody.
November 8th is a Bet and Aid Punsters Day.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
A pun day.
It's a fun day, Kevin. It's a pun day.
And the pundits 8th. Are coming out.
Right.
It's like the worst Bengals song ever that we're breaking into right now. Yeah, Ed notoriously enjoys a pun in a way that I definitely do not.
I fall into that category as well.
Yeah. Oh, I edit puns out of the Flopcast all the time.
Left and right. Listeners, you don't know what you're missing.
And the sad part is I'm shouting the puns back into the podcast as I'm listening to it. Like, oh, that was so obvious.
You can just sense where there should have been a pun.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know that in some parallel universe, Cornflake yelled out a pun and I edited it out of the show.
Yump. Yep.
And of course, Cornflake and I have a history with puns, do we not?
We've not discussed this on the show, I don't think, but we do.
Well, yeah,
it's true.
You two were in an actual pun competition at a convention many years ago.
Long time ago. 18 years now.
Yes, yes, at Dementia 2001.
It was our buddy Blasted Bill hosted a convention called Dementia 2001, and among the guests of honor performing were the Sponge Awareness Foundation, which is us. So we were out there to play our little silly songs for the silly people. But then also on the agenda was a pun competition, and you two both entered it.
Yes, and it was a good time. I don't think either of us had ever done a pun contest before.
Oh, I definitely had never. No. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Neither did I.
Yeah, I witnessed the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. I think I saw you cowering in the corner. Yeah, more like
wanting to be over.
Yeah, yeah. That was scary. Ed got knocked out. You lasted a few rounds. Then you got knocked out at some point. I believe you repeated the same pun as someone else.
I did. Because
immediate ejection from the pun competition.
I didn't realize the rules because it was my first time.
Yeah.
And the pun was Mickey Mouse.
Wow, you actually remember
I absolutely remember this.
This has just been haunting you for 18 years. You wake up screaming Mickey Mouse every night.
And I reused Mickey Mouse in a different way, but it was the same phrase, and the subject was cartoons, something like
that. Immediately ejected.
I was ejected, So it let Cornflake go and take the round.
She was able to run the table.
You
won.
I did.
You were the winner of the pun contest and at Dementia 2001.
I had no idea how to win because what I was challenged with at the end was something called a shaggy dog. And I didn't know what it was. And so it was so meta, guys. I ended up making up a shaggy dog about a shaggy dog.
You took it literally.
I didn't know what else to do.
And she made up this wonderful story about a shaggy dog, and it had three puns in it, which was the requirement.
Right.
Yep.
And it ended up winning. I didn't know what a shaggy dog was either. To those who are not familiar with a shaggy dog, because apparently we weren't, it's a story when you have a long, drawn-out sequence of events or something goes on, and it ends with a really bad pun.
But the whole point of November 8th, and I'm sure Kevin is going to love this, is to give punsters fodder for the puns that they make up.
I'm already planning which corner of the basement I'm going to be hiding in.
Yeah, and it's hard to discuss it in a podcast form because what makes puns fun is...
Nothing. Oh, you kids have fun with Pun Day. Susanna Hoffs and I will just be cowering in terror somewhere, regretting it all.
I'm so glad you were here for this, Ed.
It was wonderful.
Up top.
I wasn't expecting to say this week, but I'm really looking forward to getting back to the train talk. So, just to reset from last week, we had Ed here as a special guest for last week's show, and Ed is back this week. Ed and I, we've known each other forever, and we had a comedy band, and still do have a comedy band on occasion. We will occasionally reunite, resurface to terrorize everybody, our comedy band, the Sponge Awareness Foundation. And Ed is also a train aficionado and expert. And we brought Ed in last week to kind of talk about trains in pop culture. We did a bunch last week. We're doing a bunch more this week. And we have a bunch of topics on little slips of paper, which I'm dropping into our Big Apple bag from the Big Apple, an apple orchard in Wrentham, Massachusetts, because Wrentham is where the Sponge Awareness Foundation did a lot of our recording back in the day.
Mixing them around so I don't cheat.
Randomizing the train topics. We're going to fish them out one at a time, and then Ed is going to ruin each one of them for us.
By making up a pun about...
challenge accepted.
Wow. I sure wish that didn't just happen. But I think it maybe it did. All right, Cornflake, let's go. Let's go. What do we have? What are we starting with?
Stand By Me.
Oh,
a classic.
Starting strong.
You and I watched Stand By Me together.
Flopcast movie night.
A couple years ago. I don't think that was even for the Flopcast. We didn't do a show about Stand By Me.
No.
We just watched it.
Yeah.
That wasn't even for the show.
Okay, so...
That was back when we would still occasionally get together and just do something.
And be friends,
Not record it for a podcast. Yeah, we don't make that mistake anymore. Yeah, if you and I are going to watch a movie, it's because we're going to make a podcast about it.
Yep.
Yeah, that was just, you'd never seen Stand By Me, and it's one of my favorite movies.
You said, you got to see Stand By Me, Cornflake.
Yeah, you came over, and we got some pizza, we watched the movie, and then we didn't make a show about it. But Stand By Me, famously, of course, the whole movie involves walking down a train track,
right.
And then there's a very dramatic train scene. Ed, what can you tell us about Stand By Me from a train perspective?
From a train perspective. Well, as we talked about last week a little bit, is that I am involved at a real railroad, railroad museum in Maine.
Plug the museum?
Yes. It's the Wiscasset, Waterville, and Farmington Railway Museum. It's in Alna, Maine, and you can find us on Facebook or on all the interwebs and all of that stuff, and be happy to... Any Flopcast listener who ever stops by and identifies himself and finds me, I'll give him a ride on the hand car, I promise.
Woo! Nice.
Yes.
And that's not a euphemism for something very disturbing. Ed means an actual hand car on a railroad line.
Yes, a real hand car. A pump car, if you will.
Oh, no, this is getting worse. People are fleeing the state of Maine as we speak.
As they should.
The prospect of a pump car ride from Ed. 1986, Stand By Me.
Right.
River Phoenix, Corey Feldman.
Right. And the kids, they start walking across a railroad bridge.
Jerry O'Connell, Will Wheaton.
Uh-huh.
Off they go.
Off they go. They start walking across a railroad bridge. The kid grabs the rail before he goes across the bridge, feels the rail to see if there's a train coming.
Yes.
No. It's never going to tell you if there's a train coming, as was later established. And sometimes a common myth would also be you listen to the rail and you can hear the train coming.
Yeah.
No. Doesn't
work.
Okay. Not ain't going
to
happen.
Good to know.
Good to know.
This is how you set yourself up for a beheading.
Exactly. Mm. And now I'm going to pontificate a little bit. I'm sorry.
Please do. No, I think this is an appropriate PSA time.
Yeah, yeah. Stay off the railroad tracks, kids.
Yeah. No, you called me out on this
a
year or two ago.
I did.
Because me and my goofy friend, and we were walking along a railroad line.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, don't do that. And you're absolutely right.
Right, right. You know,
don't be like Corey Feldman, kids. I guess that applies to almost any aspect of your life. Don't be like Corey Feldman.
That turns out to be excellent advice on so many levels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see close calls when I'm running the trains. But the reality is, 100 years ago, travel was much more common. There was a train in every town. So people were more familiar with railroad safety. Today, you have no clue.
And
so as such, like we talked about track gauges in last week's show, you know, that 4 feet, 8.5 inches track gauge.
That's why that was the most popular Flopcast episode ever, because of all that talk about track gauges.
On a standard gauge train, the overhang from the train itself extends another 2 to 3 feet either side of that rail. So you, if you think you're close to the tracks, you could be nailed by the train. And there's so many cases of people taking selfies as the train goes by, and they don't make it.
Yikes. Yeah, yeah. You don't do that.
Sorry to be such a downer. No. But hey, what a great movie.
Yes.
No, that's a good takeaway, a good lesson in the middle of our goofy show. Absolutely. Stay off the tracks.
Yeah.
And the shot where the train is coming up right behind them. The train was not as close, I think, as it even looked. Because it kind of looks strange,
yes,
that shot. And that's, I think, because of the way it was shot. And they used a special lens,
yep.
I think.
They used a telephoto lens. The train was barely on the bridge as they are coming off of it. And it just made it look like it was right on top of them. It was to the point where the director had to make up a story why the kids had to run and have the look of fear of death in their eyes. Just to get them to act like there was a train following them.
Yeah. You liked that movie, right? You had a good time?
Yeah, I did.
We had some pie. We watched Stand By Me.
I shielded my eyes when it came to the leeches.
The leech scene is a little creepy.
Oh.
Yeah, stay off the train tracks and stay out of leech-infested waters.
Yes.
Another good tip.
Right. But the good news is now you can hike across that bridge safely because the tracks have been removed. The railroad has been scrapped.
Okay, forget everything we just said.
You can walk across that bridge all you want.
Go wander around wherever you like.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Next, out of the bag, Cornflake.
Saint Elsewhere, also Spencer for Hire.
Okay, now we're in Boston, because, again, the inspiration to have Ed on the show was specifically train stuff shot in Boston for TV and movies. And Saint Elsewhere, back in the 80s, medical drama TV series set in Boston. They didn't film the show in Boston, I don't think, but they filmed that exterior shot in Boston that you see in the opening credits, which includes the subway line, the Orange Line.
Yes.
Elevated.
The Elevated.
Yeah.
The Boston Elevated Railroad, actually.
What was that about?
Well, the Orange Line, as it was constructed, was the Boston Elevated Railroad, built in 1901. And that would have included the section of the Elevated that ran by the fictional St. Eligius Hospital, which was not really a hospital at all. It was a housing development of some sort.
So the Orange Line, the Boston subway system, you got the Red Line, Green Line, Blue Line, Orange Line.
Yes.
The Orange Line is what you see in St. Elsewhere in the credits. Not that part of it is not there anymore.
That is correct.
The elevated part no longer exists.
Right, because what happened was in 1987, they shifted it to a new alignment, buried it underground, and that happened in 1987. Kevin, what year did St. Elsewhere end?
I'm going to say 87.
No, it was 1988.
88.
Okay. So in 1988... they did not change the opening sequence. So they showed something that could not have been there at that point. That was never updated.
Yeah.
And
although the whole series takes place inside a kid's mind anyway. So anything goes.
Anything goes. That's
true. Elsewhere, if you know what I mean.
That's true.
So that's St. Elsewhere, but we also wanted to touch on Spencer for Hire.
Yes.
Which Spencer for Hire, the whole series was shot in Boston. So they must have done a lot of train and subway stuff over, because that series ran a few years.
Yeah. And I watched every single episode for this Flopcast tonight, just so I could be ready.
You've spent the entire week since last week in a bunker watching Spencer for Hire.
No.
Whew, you had me going there.
You paused only to get that beautiful new Robert Urich tattoo on your forearm. Lovely, isn't it? Popeye style. Very impressive.
So, Spencer for Hire opening sequence is all I really watched. And it does show a very classic shot of the Red Line going over the Charles River.
Yeah.
And that line is now the only real elevated section of track in Boston. Right. It would be right there.
You know that Robert Urich, though, from Spencer for Hire, when they made the remake or the sequel series of Love Boat in the 90s, Love Boat the Next Wave, that was your new captain, Robert Urich. He was the captain of the boat, Love Boat.
But in analyzing...
Right back to the train.
Thank you for bringing us back, Ed.
Staying on topic, Kevin. Also during the opening sequence, there's a quick shot of the interior of the Boston Garden. The classic Boston Garden.
Yeah, the real Boston.
The real Boston Garden, which was, of course... really North Station. Mm-hmm. It was built by the Boston and Maine Railroad Company in 1933 or so, and was the major sports arena, but it was built on top of the railroad station by the railroad company.
Sure. I don't think I've ever seen Spencer for Hire. I haven't even seen the opening credits.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Did you watch it back in the day?
I vaguely remember my mom liked to watch it, and I think I remember maybe... watching an episode here or there, but I remember seeing the opening sequence train.
You watch the train part and then you're out.
Yeah, then I was done.
And same thing with St. Elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Only watch the beginning.
Yep, that's all I wanted to see. There goes the train by again. Yep, there it goes. Bye.
You didn't stick around to watch Howie Mandel?
No.
All right. Well, let's move on then. What else is in the bag?
Why, Polar Express is
Polar
in the bag.
Express.
We've discussed this on the show before.
Yeah, a little bit. This is a Christmas cartoon about a train, and I've never seen it. But it's kind of scary, creepy, Tom Hanks animated cartoon train Christmas guy.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, Polar Express, in my interactions with people at the Railroad Museum, sometimes they'll bring up Polar Express. Oh, I saw the Polar Express, and they think that's cool. And
so I think I know everything about trains now, right? You get that? You get those...
And they start train-splaining at you?
Yeah,
Polar Express media.
It's just like Sheldon Cooper would, you know, they try to... But what's funny is there's a kid in the Polar Express who thinks he knows everything, you know, that's one
about
of his
trains.
Characters.
Yes.
And he spouts out... all these facts and figures about the locomotive that was there, and says that it was built by Baldwin in, you know, whatever year and all that stuff. It wasn't built by Baldwin.
Oh.
And that was intentional. They knew exactly what locomotive it was. You see, this locomotive was something that was special to the author of the Polar Express, Chris Van Allsburg. He grew up in Michigan, and this particular locomotive was on display in a park in Michigan and used to climb on it as a kid. And the only reason that this particular locomotive had been saved to start with, when they were scrapping the steam locomotives back in the 1950s, they saved it because the guy who they had hired to actually scrap and cut the locomotive up didn't want to cut it up because the locomotive's number was 1225, and he didn't want to cut up Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Meanwhile, the locomotive had been pulled from the park, completely restored, and you can ride it today, and all the sounds, all the CGI is of that particular locomotive, the Pierre Marquette 1225, which was built by Lima Locomotive Works in Ohio and not Baldwin.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and they didn't want to say Lima because they thought it would sound like Lima beams.
Right.
If you ride the train today, do they have like scary robot Tom Hanks?
Oh, the Deadeye.
Have you seen the movie?
Yes, several times.
You've seen the movie?
Yes.
Yeah. I've never seen the movie. If I'm going to go a train in a Christmas cartoon, I'm going to Frosty the Snowman, where they ride that train to the North Pole.
That's classic.
Yeah. I'd have to go, if I'm going to go Christmas story and train, I'm going to go train with the square wheels.
Misfit
Toys.
Misfit Toys. You got to go there.
Yeah, a lot of good, weird Christmas trains out there.
It's a natural connection. A lot of people connect trains at Christmas time. You know, even down to having the train around the Christmas tree.
Sure.
Very common.
Yeah. That's a fire hazard, though.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what isn't with a Christmas tree?
Everything is a fire hazard. We might have to cancel Christmas. We're sorry. What's in the bag, Cornflake?
Casey Jr. Dumbo / Ward Kimball.
What does that mean?
I wanted to talk about Walt Disney and his connection with trains. And okay. That's basically what that boils down to.
Dumbo.
Dumbo.
That's your flying elephant.
Yes.
And that's all I know.
Yeah. And I'm talking classic cartoon Dumbo. I'm not talking about the recent remake. What's cool about this is Disney and Ward Kimball. Ward Kimball was the supervising animator for Casey Jr. He was also best known for animating Jiminy Cricket.
Is Casey Jr. a character in Dumbo?
Yes. So Casey Jr. is a pretty accurate anthropomorphic locomotive. The way that he did it, the sound effects they used, the way that he animates how a steam locomotive starts up, he just animates that so well in that sequence. And it's really considered a classic among train enthusiasts. If you're going to look at a classic locomotive animation, you go to Casey Jr. And the reason why he gets that so well is because he was a train nut. He had a backyard railroad of real locomotives. He would hang out with his buddy, Walt Disney, and it was Ward's love of trains that also inspired Walt Disney to make sure that when he built Disney World, it was going to have a train ride and all
rail
of that
system,
stuff.
Yeah.
And a real working railroad, not something fake, but the real thing. And yeah.
How did they get the flying elephant so wrong? that elephant really ruined the whole movie for me.
Casey sounds like a really passionate guy, though.
Yeah. Ward was a very passionate guy.
Oh, that's what I meant.
You mean the guy from the Sunshine Band?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very passionate man. Absolutely. Cornflake, what's in the bag?
I'm never going to live that down. Next Karate Kid.
The next Karate Kid. Here we go. I think this is what inspired us to even do these train shows.
Yes.
As you and I got to a Turkston one day, back and forth, as you were uncovering more and more startling information about the next Karate Kid. Because this is something we've discussed on the show a while back. The next Karate Kid was Hilary Swank.
Right.
They did Karate Kid. Then they did Karate Kid Part 2 and Karate Kid Part 3, all with Ralph Macchio. Then Macchio's out. They bring in Hilary Swank. She's the star with Pat Morita of the next Karate Kid. And this is what, 1993 or so? What year was that?
1994.
94, okay. And a good chunk of the movie is set in the Boston area. And Hilary Swank's boyfriend works for the T, the Boston subway line. And there's actual scenes where they're walking along on top of a subway car. They're in a rail yard where the subway cars are stored. And you had a hard time believing when I said, I think they actually shot this around here. You were doubtful.
I was doubtful.
And then
that's
you
right.
looked into it. So can you, let's blow this open, this whole next Karate Kid conspiracy, all the theories, all the lies, all the secrets. What's the deal with the next Karate Kid?
All yeah,
I said, no way would they have allowed.
Did you just bleep yourself?
Save the rooster.
Saving me a lot of time in the editing bay. Thank you.
I said, no way did they shoot this in a live railroad yard. It would not have happened. And then I started doing research, and of course I was wrong.
So they actually shot this in the Boston area using actual subway cars.
Yes. There was a lot of problems with that scene, but but they had to make it safe, is what they did. They shot it at what's called Cabot Yard on the Boston Red Line. Like you said, where they store the Red Line cars.
Okay.
It was also where in the Spencer for Hire opening sequence is a gunfight, and you see very quickly that it takes place at this Cabot Yard.
Wow.
So
we got to hang around Cabot Yard.
Yeah.
It's
happening.
It's happening.
Stars. The big problem I had with it, the guy just drives up to the railroad track, and he climbs on top of a Red Line car.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it would work.
You don't really do that.
No, you don't really do that. And let's also remember, he's in high school, so the youngest he could be is 18 and make that work.
Yeah.
So there's some problems, you know.
They don't hire teenagers to wander around on top of subway cars.
Right. And they're walking by, they cross right in front of it, and subways, of course, are run famously by the third rail. Everyone knows, don't touch the third rail, because you'll die.
Dangerous third rail.
Right.
And this kid's just tap dancing on top of it?
Pretty much, yeah. No warning. Hey, girlfriend, don't stand on the third rail.
Hillary Swank can really pick them, can't she?
Oh, yeah.
And then they climb up on top of the car using a ladder. There would be no ladder on top of the car.
There's a ladder on the side of the subway car.
Right. They put that there so that they could climb up to the roof of this thing.
Filmmakers added a ladder to a real Boston subway car.
Absolutely. Right. And that railroad car would have been car 1737. I did some research on that.
Yep.
And the car is still in service. You could ride that car today in Boston. It's still there.
As we speak, people are riding in the Hillary Swank subway car from The Next Karate Kid.
Absolutely.
We're envious of every single last one of them.
Is the ladder still on it?
That I don't know. I suspect not.
Yeah, it seems like that'd be a problem.
Yeah, that would be.
You just leave a crazy extra ladder hanging off the side of your car.
But I would imagine you, if you looked close enough to the front of the subway car, you would find the holes where the ladder would have been mounted.
Some remnant of where they put it on there.
Yeah, because it was obviously permanent, well, semi to permanently attached because they got kids climbing on top of the thing.
Yeah, you
got
to protect Swank.
Yes.
Yeah. Nowadays, if you want to get on top of that rail car, you have to parasail and land just right.
Absolutely. That's the right way to do it. That's the safest way.
That's the cornflake way.
Right. How much trouble would it be for us, the three of us, to go into Boston and track down the subway car and record the rest of the show from on top of the Hillary Swank subway car?
Let's go.
Here we go.
I've got ways to do that.
Yeah. That's amazing. I like this research that you actually track down the actual car and confirm that it's in operation today.
Right. But better get on it soon because in the next few years, that series of railroad cars will be phased out.
A quarter century later, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of The Next Karate Kid. That's why things have seemed so festive around here all year.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah. As a city, Boston has just been celebrating the Swank era.
Yeah.
The important thing is it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you say so.
It's Mr. Miyagi.
I'm way too tired to argue.
And Hilary Swank. And there's a bunch of monks. Like they move into a monastery just outside of Boston somewhere, evidently. And they're just climbing all over subway cars.
Believable.
Cornflake, what's in the bag?
Let's see. What we have here now is silver spoons. Oh, we've been waiting for this.
Obviously, silver spoons has a train. We've talked about silver spoons so much over the years. Classic, goofy 80s sitcom. I just had a Tai Chi workshop session a couple months ago with one of the stars of Silver Spoons, Erin Gray. She taught me how to do Tai Chi. You may recall. I wish I was making that up, but I actually got an actual Tai Chi lesson from actual Kate Summers from Silver Spoons, Erin Gray. She's actually ridden on that train on the Silver Spoons set. Not often. Usually it'd be Eddie, the father, or Ricky.
Right.
I don't think Kate hopped on that train very often.
Right.
But I remember Eddie being on it a lot.
Oh, yeah. He was usually
sure
who'd ride that train. But this was a little working train that would come riding into the big main room of the mansion that the Stratton family lived in on Silver Spoons. What's the deal with that little train?
Well, there's a good reason why you'd only see Eddie, mostly see Eddie driving that train, because it's a real train. And later interviews with Ricky Schroeder confirmed that he was terrified of the train.
Ricky didn't like the train?
No, he did not. It was a real, it's what they call a live steam locomotive. Mm. And basically, you've got tracks that are 7.5 inches wide.
Yeah.
And then you build a real steam locomotive on top of that. And that's
you just
what
put it in your house.
Well, usually you don't do that. They're made to be run in the backyard.
Yep.
And one of the first and most prominent early adopters of what became known as live steam and the live steam hobby was Walt Disney. So he had his own backyard railroad.
Sure.
And other people started to get involved with this. One of these people got involved with it to help supply Walt Disney with the parts that he needed. He built a business around it, and then he went on to build the train for Super Train and built the train for Silver Spoons.
Wait, the same guy built the Super Train? Last week we talked about Super Train, which was a very short-lived TV series.
I haven't stopped talking about Super Train.
It was Love Boat on a train, and they built a giant train in which they would pack with celebrities to make a stupid show every week. The same guy made the Super Train and the Silver Spoons train?
The model that was used in the exterior shots for Super Train that they've found recently in a barn.
Yeah.
That train was built by this railroad supply company, is the name of the company. Really inventive name. So the railroad supply company not only built the super train, they built the train and were in charge of maintaining the train for Silver Spoons.
Wow.
The Silver Spoons train, they did make one modification to it. Instead of making it run on fire and water and steam, which are hot and dangerous and shouldn't be inside, they made it run on compressed air. And that was how they were able to operate this thing inside. Basically, they would charge it up with a air compressor and then run it into the scene and then run it out again. And that's also why they were able to decorate the train. If you notice throughout the seasons, they might decorate it for Christmas or they decorate it for different events. And there'd be paper where the thing would be normally hot and on fire.
Yes.
That's how they were able to do that. They operated the train on compressed air.
What I liked on that show as well, you had the train coming in and then the front door was right there. Like with the doorbell rings and they'd go to answer the door. And they had a remote control for the door, for the front door. And they would stand 2 feet away from the door and push a button for the door to open. Meanwhile, apparently there's a giant gaping entrance because how does that train come in? Because you'd see the train through the window, like riding through the backyard behind them. And then it goes off camera, out of view, and then comes right in, middle of the room. So anybody could just crawl in through however the train's getting in, right? Why wasn't the Stratton Mansion just filled with raccoons and whatnot?
Maybe they were like Ricky Schroeder and they were all afraid of the train.
Did Alfonso Ribeiro ever ride the train? He must have. I don't remember. It was usually Ricky or Eddie.
Yeah, and one person who was not on the train, interesting enough, may come up later in the show.
Oh, interesting.
Who should have been on the train.
Was it Menudo?
No, Menudo was on the train.
Menudo got on the train. They did get kids from Menudo did ride the train on Silver Spoons. Outstanding. Our friend Sarah, who was on the show after...
She offered you Earth Fruit.
After the Gods Comics concert, she's going to be so excited that we're talking this much about Silver Spoons.
Ah.
Right. I did some additional research to see if I could find out what happened to the train.
Oh, yeah. We got to find that train.
I could not find that train. It seems to have disappeared.
Hidden in a barn somewhere.
It's hidden in a barn somewhere. I'm sure it exists. There are stories, but I couldn't get any real hard evidence. And I'm also not sure that it was the same train the whole time, because there was an opening sequence that I saw that showed at least a different, what they call tender, which is where they put the coal. So there was something not quite right.
That makes sense that they might switch things out or modify things over the years.
Right. Well, I think what happened is that they shot the pilot with a real steam engine and then realized that's not a good idea. And then they switched it over to compressed air.
Wow.
And that's all I got on Silver Spoons.
Well, unfortunately, I've blocked out another 45 minutes for all Silver Spoons talk, so we better just keep going.
Here we are, face to face.
Hey, Cornflake, what's in the bag?
Oh, I can't wait to find out. It is Conjunction Junction.
All right, here we go.
Yes.
This has certainly come up on the show before. Schoolhouse Rock. Perhaps the most well-known, most fondly remembered of all the Schoolhouse Rock cartoons, arguably, is Conjunction Junction.
Absolutely. You know, and it's not, you haven't lived and you have a bunch of drunk college kids shouting out, Conjunction Junction, what's your function, at you.
That's a good point. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that, but this song has an important role in the history of our band, Sponge Awareness Foundation, because that's really when we started getting a lot of attention. What really rocketed us to the top of the charts and made us the massively successful phenomenon that we were in the early 90s Boston rock scene. We were probably the top concert draw in this area for several years running. And it all started with our Schoolhouse Rock medley and playing it at the college. Kids would go out of their mind because they hadn't heard these songs since they were, pre-YouTube, pre-everything era, early 90s. These songs were not around, the cartoons were not around, and we were bringing Schoolhouse Rock back to the people. And the finale of our Schoolhouse Rock medley was Conjunction Junction.
Absolutely.
That's how we would just bring the house down.
And they loved it. And I think we, in a small, insignificant way, helped carry the torch for Schoolhouse Rock between the time when it was off the air until it had a little bit of a resurgence in more
in
recent
the late
memory.
90s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Other people were involved, but I think we could take maybe 60% of the credit for everything that has happened with Schoolhouse Rock to this day. That's fine.
Yeah, well, I think we can look at that.
How realistic was the depiction of rail yard work in the Conjunction Junction cartoon?
It was completely wrong.
Oh, no. I find that hard to believe. Are you saying that trains are not completely connected by conjunctions?
Well,
And, but, and or?
I will give them this. I liked what they did with that, is they took and, but, and or, and they took and placed it on a boxcar. And a boxcar is what you would put your solid material, your solid goods, if you're going to be transporting it.
Yeah.
And it's the most common. They put but in the tank car, where you would be carrying liquid goods, kind of the opposite of a boxcar. And they say, right in the script, but it's kind of like the opposite of and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they did that with the railroad car.
Solid and liquid.
Right. And then there's or.
Yeah.
And then they put out a hopper car. And the hopper car is what you would carry iron ore in.
Wow.
Clever.
It was very clever.
Do you think this was intentional?
Absolutely.
Or just a happy coincidence?
I am sure that that was intentional.
Wow. Do you think anyone else noticed this besides you in the last 45 years?
No.
No.
No. I'm guessing more people caught the ore joke.
I don't think anybody noticed.
I certainly remember noticing that when I was a kid. But the and the but being the opposite of each other in a boxcar and a tank car, that didn't
catch. That's next level.
That's next level.
Completely oblivious to all this. I would just be chomping on my Cookie Crisp, just waiting for Captain Caveman to start.
Everything else, though, is problems. the rail yard itself, I mean, but it's a goofy animation. It's fine. But the railroad itself, they've got these cars coming in.
We're going to allow Schoolhouse Rock to take some liberties with how a rail yard is operated. That's big of you.
They've got cars coming in and out, and they're not being pushed by a locomotive, which would imply it's what they call a hump yard, where they basically...
What?
Hang on, you got to give us a couple of minutes to giggle immaturely.
I was hoping I was just going to land right on that.
No, we're going to land right here for several minutes of giggling.
Well, now I'm awake.
We were losing you there, but we brought you back.
Now we're talking about
the
humping.
Magic of the hump yard. Welcome back, Conklin.
Tell us more, Ed.
So the whole sequence takes place in what would be called a hump yard. Yes, we can...
Sorry, it's still funny.
The whole sequence takes place in what's called a hump yard, which is basically where you've got a large hill and you let the rail cars roll down so that they can be switched automatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to show. But what's really going on is this is tracks and trains just going at random.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. Right. It's fine.
Yeah, we're connecting sentences, words and phrases and clauses.
So, yeah, it's fine. But the main character, if he were working the rail yard like he's purportedly doing, he'd be a brakeman or a switchman of some sort. They've got him dressed as a goofy engineer with this oversized puffy hat.
A big, silly puffy hat.
Yeah.
So he can just, stroll right into his night job as a chef.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who is the more realistic rail yard employee, the Conjunction Junction dude or Hillary Swank's boyfriend?
Ooh.
Or was it the same guy?
Ooh, yeah, yes. I think the answer to that question is yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And the last thing with the guy is he's carrying a goofy red lantern.
Yep.
That's one of the things, he's one of his props. If you're working a railroad yard in the middle of the day, you are not carrying our goofy red lantern around. It's going to get in the way. It's just not what you do. Not to mention, it wouldn't be a red lantern. It would be a white lantern. When you are switching trains, you use a white lantern to give your signals, not a red one. A red one means stop. Not me. It does not mean, give signals for switching cars around. So, yeah, I have some problems with Conjunction Junction. Fun.
I'm sorry.
We're just done. That's all we're going to think about now for the rest of the show. How about that song, though?
Oh, man. Great song.
Jack Sheldon.
Yeah,
can't beat Jack Sheldon.
Nope.
The best. One of the best Schoolhouse Rock songs, even if they got the details wrong.
Cornflake.
It's magical.
We got a couple more train items here in the bag. What's going on? What do we have?
I'm going to do Charlie on the MTA.
Oh.
Yes. Kevin, you want to set this one up?
Charlie on the MTA is a classic song from long ago. When did this song come from? Like the 1940s or so?
Yes.
Did actually, I get that? Am I correct?
You are correct.
Wow.
It actually was written in 1949 for the campaign for Walter O'Brien, who was running for mayor of Boston.
This was a political campaign jingle kind of a song.
Yeah, yeah. He was a progressive candidate, and he had commissioned a couple of local songwriters to write a song, 10 songs, a total of 10 songs that he could broadcast from one of those cars with the giant loudspeakers on it as they went around Boston. And he ultimately had to pay a fine for disturbing the peace for doing that, by the way.
We should get one of those cars to use for the Flopcast.
Yeah.
We'd have a lot more listeners if we just drove around in a car with a big horn on it.
And I'm really good at disturbing the peace.
Yeah.
So Walter had commissioned these songs. And basically, he was trying to call attention to the fact that what had occurred just a few years earlier was the concept of what was called the exit fare. They implemented this very complicated fare system, and it was they had a booklet. You had to figure out your fare, and on top of that, when you got off the train, sometimes you would have to pay. And Walter O'Brien thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so one of the planks in his platform was that he was going to abolish the exit fare.
So that's the wacky premise of the song, is this guy's trapped on the Boston subway system because he can't afford to pay his way off.
Right. Exactly.
And he'll never return.
He will never return.
We all know the song.
Right. Right. And the reason why we all know the song is because it predates even that. It was actually written in 1865. The melody was used in a song called The Ship That Never Returned.
Oh, wow.
And
I know this.
Yeah, so it was a rehash of that song. So it was a parody, if you will, even to start with.
All right.
So Walter O'Brien adapted it, and they played it over the loudspeaker. And of course, because of the wide success of the song, he loses the election and becomes a librarian.
Perfect.
The exit fares, they stayed. And they were even used right up until the 1980s to get off the red line in Braintree or Quincy. You had to pay to get off the red line.
I had no idea that was going on that late.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's one way to keep people out of your town.
Yeah.
Population control. You cannot get off the train here.
But the song just lived on, and other artists covered it.
Right.
Folk musicians and whatnot over the years.
Other parodies, too, over the years.
Right, absolutely. It became most prominent, of course, in 1959. It was recorded and became a hit by the Kingston Trio.
Kingston Trio, of course.
Right. And they, at that time, they changed the candidate's name from Walter to George because, interestingly enough, because Walter O'Brien was a progressive candidate who, by the 1950s, would have been McCarthy era communism. Mm. And so they said, we're not going to associate with that. So they just changed his name. And then they edited out the candidate reference altogether.
Yeah, nobody cares about that part anymore.
Right, right. They also, oddly enough, got rid of one of the verses. There's a verse that the Kingston Trio did not record.
Yeah, the controversial verse about being in a hump yard.
Yes.
Trying to keep the song family friendly.
You know? Absolutely. And they replaced it with a banjo solo.
Yes.
It was also covered by Dropkick Murphys.
Oh, that's cool. I don't think I've heard their version.
Yeah, yeah.
Irish punk band from Boston, Dropkick Murphys.
Right, right. There was an obscure band from 1989 that covered it, Wet Paint.
That's your band. You know Wet Paint. We talked about Wet Paint here on the Flopcast many years ago.
Many, many years ago.
That was your first college band before our band got together, Sponge Awareness. You had Wet Paint.
We did.
And you guys did Charlie on the MTA?
We did Charlie on the MTA.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and we changed the candidate's name to Mike Dukakis.
Sure, because that was the era of the 88 presidential election. That makes sense.
Right, right. But today we have the Charlie card.
And yeah, the MBTA subway system has really embraced Charlie, the song, and the character.
Oh.
And now you got your card now when you ride the T subway in Boston. You tap your card to get in, and the card is, they call it the Charlie card. And there's a little picture of the guy on it.
Right, as homage to the guy who couldn't pay his fare.
Yeah.
So now you pay his fare over and over again.
Yeah, that's kind of fun, though. I like that.
I do, too.
The Charlie card.
It'd make a good Halloween costume.
You know, did we mention that on the show ever? That a couple of years ago for a Halloween party, I put together a Charlie costume.
Yes.
I was Charlie on the MTA, as depicted on the Charlie card these days.
And the funny thing is, I saw a picture of it before you discussed it on the show.
Yeah.
And you said, nobody's going to get this. And of course, I immediately said, I know exactly who this is.
Yeah. It was a terrifying costume. That's Charlie. Let's move on. There's only one left.
Okay. So let's get at it.
Okay. This is just like a big list of names here, right?
Yeah.
Ed, you'd sent me a list of names of famous people.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure why. Are these all people that are into trains?
They are, or have a strong connection to trains, but mostly they are into trains.
All right.
And let's go.
Yeah, I'm looking at six names here.
All right. First of all on the list is Gary Coleman.
Oh, Gary Coleman. Here we go.
Yes. He, of course, was Arnold on Different Strokes.
Yep. Right? Gary was definitely a train guy, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Into model trains.
Model trains. He had a HO model railroad that appeared on the cover with him on one of the railroad magazines. Mm. He's there on the cover with one of his model railroads. He actually donated a complete model railroad to a club in Colorado. His first feature film was On the Right Track.
Absolutely. I wanted to make sure we got a mention of On the Right Track. Right. Do you know On the Right Track?
We've talked about it.
I don't remember, but I'm sure we have. I can't say I'm surprised.
Because there's no other way I would have known about it.
Yeah, yeah. That's the premise was Gary Coleman was a kid that lived in the subway station in New York.
Chicago Union Station.
Oh, Chicago. Okay. But he lived like inside a locker. In a train station.
Yes, in the locker.
Yes, yep. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Sure. Oddly enough, when he crossed over into Silver Spoons, he is not shown riding the train.
Yeah. Well, how did they miss that opportunity to get Gary Coleman on that train? Do you think he at least got to ride it just off camera?
I would hope so.
He's a train guy. You're He's right. on the show where they have a working train on the set. Somebody please give Gary Coleman a break for once. Yeah, that was so exciting when he showed up on Silver Spoons, because he was in character. Yeah, that was Arnold Jackson from Different Strokes. That was connecting the universes.
The coolest thing.
That connected Silver Spoons and Different Strokes to be in the same world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Along with Facts of Life. Mm-hmm. And Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry is the one I always forget.
Yes.
As we should.
All right, who else is on your list of celebrities that are into trains?
Also, same era, Michael Gross.
Michael Gross from Family Ties.
He is a train aficionado.
Steve Keaton.
Steve Keaton.
Bearded patriarch of the Keaton clan.
Yeah. His grandfather worked for the Santa Fe Railroad and got him interested as a kid into trains, mostly into memorabilia. Mm. He's really a memorabilia collector. I actually have a friend who outbid Michael Gross on a piece of railroad memorabilia. And Michael thought he was just jacking up the bid because, you know, oh, I'm going to show Michael Gross.
Show Mr. Hollywood here.
Right, right. And then once he realized, oh, no, I really want this, then Michael backed off and let the guy have it.
Nice.
So, anyhow.
A bidding war with
Michael Gross over a switch stand.
Yeah. I've had a lot of tense battles on eBay over the years with Justine Bateman, so I can kind of relate.
Right. Anyhow. Sure you did. Michael actually ended up saving the Santa Fe Railroad. When that branch line was going to be abandoned, he was part of the investment group that bought it to operate it, and that he is still a part owner of that railroad to this day.
He should decorate the trains on his railroad to look like those giant worm monsters in Tremors. The movie he made with Kevin Bacon. He's up next?
Yeah, Neil Young.
Neil Young, here we go. Neil Young is a train guy?
Neil Young isn't only a train guy. He is way into our friend Lionel.
Lionel Trains.
Lionel Trains.
Big name in model trains.
Yes.
Or toy trains. In models to a certain degree, but
I played with Lionel toy trains when I was little.
Yes, and as did I. I had quite a collection of Lionel trains, Kevin would remember.
Yeah. Now, Neil Young, as a super rich rock star, does he have some massive, amazing train layout?
Well,
and
yes.
So can we go there and play with it?
Not anymore. He auctioned most of it off relatively recently. He got involved because his son has cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
And the son wanted to control the trains, but confined to a wheelchair and very limited mobility. So Neil actually invented a way for his son to control the trains on their train layout. Meanwhile, Lionel Trains starts to get into some financial trouble, and Neil Young and a bunch of other investors stepped in, saved Lionel Trains from bankruptcy.
Is this secretly where all the money got funneled from Farm Aid?
Yes.
I know it.
Aha.
And then he takes that control system that he invented for his kid, and he patents it, and that's the control system they now use on all the Lionel trains.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, I had no idea this was going on.
So, Neil Young.
All right.
Next on my list, I got Rod Stewart.
Sorry, we're still in the nasty world of rock and roll. Rod Stewart is a train guy?
He is a big-time train guy.
Downtown train.
Yeah. That's right. That's why he did that song. It's a Tom Waits song, we
right.
should say.
It's not originally Rod Stewart.
Yeah, Rod covered it.
Right.
Patti Smyth covered it first.
We all know then that Rod Stewart is just trying to be Patti Smyth.
Yeah, we're all trying to be Patti Smyth.
In our own little ways, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, Rod Stewart was used to watch the trains from his parents' house window, but never had him as a kid. But somehow got very serious into HO scale, very fine detailed modeling. His current home in Beverly Hills, the third floor, is a huge, intricate model railroad. And museum quality, everything is just meticulous. He's been quoted as saying that he was recently featured on the cover of a model railroading magazine, and that meant more to him than any music magazine. He would take models and have them shipped to his hotel and have them, and so that he could work on them and then have them shipped back. That's model trains, by the way.
Oh.
I'm sure all sorts of models were being shipped to his hotel. Come on, don't kid yourself.
Also, relatively recently, there was over in England, there was a vandalism event at a railroad display, totally destroyed this model railroad. And Rod Stewart found out about it, and he gave the equivalent of $13,000 to this club to help them rebuild, and then challenged some of his friends to do the same. Those friends included, who
Billy
also...
Billy Ocean.
Well, no. But these friends that
the
also...
also Katrina and the Waves. I'm talking about the top stars in music all came together for a big benefit album.
Train Aid.
And Hilary Swank.
And Hilary Swank.
Hilary was there. Yes.
Right.
Now, who did he get?
He got Jules Holland from Squeeze.
Okay.
And Roger Daltrey from The Who.
Well, sure.
And both of them are also rail enthusiasts of some sort.
Yeah.
So that's Rod Stewart and his model trains.
Can we all agree that his best song ever was a Love Touch from the 1986 movie Legal Eagles?
No.
That's a tough sell, Kevin.
Moving on, then. What do you have next?
Frank Sinatra.
Sinatra.
Old Blue Eyes.
Another train guy.
He was a big train guy. The story goes that when he was a kid, he couldn't afford trains, so he would rummage through the trash bins at Lionel Trains.
All right. I guess.
That's a story. He didn't confirm or deny it, but it's a story. But later would become friends with the guy who founded Lionel Trains, a guy by the name of Joshua Lionel Cohen. He would often be found playing trains, Lionel with his Lionel trains in his compound. He had a huge compound. And
how did these guys ever have time to make a record?
Wow. Your priorities.
Yeah.
I think that explains why we haven't made a record in a long time, Kevin.
We're too busy with trains.
At least I am.
Yeah, one of us is too busy with trains.
Frank Sinatra had a pool house shaped like a caboose. The room on his compound, it was a separate house that was just his train room. It was shaped like a railroad station that was a station that was in New Jersey at one time. Of course, Frank has since passed, but the new owner of the compound, he has kept the train room and kept the trains in it.
So, neat.
Yeah, that's Frank. And I got one more.
Yeah, this was a weird name.
Yeah.
Slightly out of place on this list of... train-obsessed celebrities.
Right,
this was a little surprise for Cornflake, I think.
It was absolutely a surprise for Cornflake. Ready?
Ready.
Barry Burbank.
What? Wow!
Who is Barry Burbank?
He's a longtime meteorologist on the local Boston stations. And he was also a graduate of UMass Lowell, where I went to school. And, wow, I've seen him speak so many times. And I had... of all the things he's ever spoken of, he's never once mentioned trains. So do tell me more.
He doesn't mention it often, but he will slip it in occasionally. Back in the day when you had the real weatherboards where you have to put the graphics up on the background board, on right? The board.
It wasn't right? Computerized.
No computerized. You know, you had what was made out of felt or something.
Yeah, or something.
Or something, Velcro. He would occasionally slip on these little codes. And what they were the codes for trains that he had seen trackside. Uh-huh. So he'd be one of those people watching the trains and charting their movements. And each freight train has a code. For example, EDPO. You know, you see EDPO on a weather map. You'd say, well, what? I don't know what that means, right? Because I don't know weather, right?
Right.
But the train geeks picked up that that's a train from East Deerfield to Portland.
Wow.
And so he'd seen that train and he'd put it on the map. And eventually, of course, they stopped him from doing that. But for years, he was known for doing that.
Everybody feels the need to stop a meteorologist's fun. That is a truism no matter where you go.
Right. And if you look at his Twitter page today, you'll see that he's got a big picture of a train on it. And his one of his quotes is that he's going to be a freight locomotive engineer in the next life.
Wow.
So Barry Burbank, local meteorological legend in the area.
Yes.
Train fan.
Super nice guy, too.
Good.
He's the real deal.
What a weird end to the train show.
Would you expect any other way?
But I think the bag is empty. That was it.
No more trains to talk about this time.
All right. Those are your train subjects. That was exhilarating.
That's one word for it.
I think that'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yes. Even I'm tired of it.
Let's wrap up then before we think of another train. Cornflake, please get us out of here.
And if we were a side, we'd be Dunyan rings. All right. So flopcast.net is our website. There's other places you can find us on the internet, too. How about facebook.com/flopcast or on Twitter, if that's your thing. Our handle is @flopcast. We're on Instagram also. the_flopcast is where you'll find us there.
That's it. All right. Well, we'll see you next week for Train Talk Part 3.
No.
No. No, just kidding. Back to our normal silliness next week. Meanwhile, let's all just meet up in the hump yard. See you there.
Oh, boy. Peace and cookies.
The answer. The ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. Is 42.
That's right, Broad Speculation, and on the 42 cast, we bring you drama-free discussions on television shows, movies, video games, novels, and comics. So don't bother thinking about the question, just go straight to the answer. It's only on the 42 cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
Okay, this is the secret after show. Anything left, Cornflake, that you wanted to share with us for the after show? Ed is still here as well, we should say.
I have been waiting hours to mention this to you, Kevin, because I heard this morning. And
so you've had something in your head, in your mind, all this time, through all this train talk. You're just waiting for it all to end so you can burst forth with this new revelation. What you got?
You Light Up My Life.
The Debbie Boone song?
No. You don't know about this?
No.
Do you know about this?
No idea.
Well, we've been talking about Facts of Life, because the connection to Peekskill.
Oh, yes, I do know what this is.
Okay,
yes.
I heard the news.
Yep.
Lifetime TV, of all places, is going to have a Christmas reunion of the Facts of Life girls.
Yes.
And I just thought, okay, Kevin has to know about this because it centers around his favorite character.
I think Kim Fields was spearheading this project, and there's a Christmas TV movie is going to be coming out starring the classic four Facts of Life women are all going to be in it together. And they did a Facts of Life reunion movie several years ago, and Nancy McKeon was not in it.
Right.
So you had Kim, Mindy, and Lisa, and Charlotte Ray. But this time they've got the four Facts of Life girls are all going to be in this together, starring this movie. Now, it's not a Facts of Life movie.
Right.
That's the tricky part. It has all the Facts of Life actors in it together, but this is not the Facts of Life. They're totally different characters, unrelated.
What?
Yeah. This is not a Facts of Life movie.
Oh.
This is a movie starring Kim Fields, Mindy Cohn, Lisa Welchel, and Nancy McKeon.
What's the point?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Where's my tootie? Is what we should all be taking to the streets with torches and pitchforks and screaming into the night.
Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll still be fun to see them all together in a heartwarming Christmas tale.
On a train.
On a train in a hump yard. What more do you want?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.